Go to 1 John chapter 2, 3. 1 John 3. You are the slowest Bible verse finder in the history of the known universe. Oh, he's still going. No, he's got another Bible.
Ryan uses a microscopic Bible.
No, because it's English and Spanish.
All right, 1 John 3. Behold, what manner of love the Father hath bestowed upon us, that we should be called the sons of God. Therefore the world knoweth us not, because it knew him not. Beloved, now we are the sons of God, and it doth not yet appear what we shall be. But we know that when he shall appear, we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is. Now, this different names of God that we started to talk about yesterday is the vehicle by which we see him. And when we see him, we shall be like him. But the mystery of that revelation is back again to his humility. He will not occupy where you are. And so let's look at these names of God and see if we can understand or see something. Let's go to go to Exodus 17. Everybody understand the premise? That the names of God are the vehicle by which we see him. And as we see him in each of these manifestations, then by the end of it, we should have lost ourselves. But as long as we don't see him in these areas, then we still have us there.
When you said a moment ago about his humility, I was thinking about, but what about our humility? That's the other side of the coin in a way.
I don't understand.
Our own humility. And our humility.
We have no humility.
Okay.
We don't. The mind can't have humility.
Well, we have the mind of Christ, if you want to go that route. To say just no, we don't have humility, doesn't click. Because of the life that's in us, there is humility. Does that work?
It's humility when you see that you don't have it. Let's take a break. Let's go look at ourselves.
And the meek shall,
Romans 3.
And the meek shall inherit the earth. Romans 12.
Romans 3. Paul is talking, and he's comparing whether the Jews had any advantage with Jews and Gentiles. So anyway, let's go to verse 9. What then? Are we, as Gentile Christians, better than they? No, in no wise. For we have before proved both Jews and Gentiles that they are all under sin. As it is written, there is none righteous, no, not one. There is none that understandeth. There is none that seeketh after God. They are all gone out of the way. They are together become unprofitable. There is none that doeth good, no, not one. Their throat is an open sepulcher. With their tongues they have used deceit. The poison of asps is under their lips, whose mouth is full of cursing and bitterness. Their feet are swift to shed blood. Destruction and misery are in their ways. The way of peace have they not known. There is no fear of God before their eyes. Now that describes Jew and Gentile. They're both the same. Jew, Gentile, Greek, Americans.
Does it include believers?
Well, it includes those in whom the mystery of Christ is not complete.
Okay.
Those in whom their apprehension of the mystery is still childish.
So even though we receive the fullness of Christ, it doesn't count until it's fully manifest.
Right.
Some such thing. So we're...
we're half-assed.
So we're half-assed Christians. That's who you're preaching to.
Well, we're preaching to everybody.
We're in a room here together.
There's an issue here that we're going out to all over the place that we don't know who. And if you don't see yourself as this, then really it becomes sort of like the Jews, and that's why the baptism of repentance was so important. The Jews believed that they had a birthright because they were the chosen people to be a part of the family of God. And so John the Baptist came and said, no. And his baptism of repentance was they had to go to the other side of the Jordan to show themselves physicality that they were sin itself. They were baptized into their death, even before Christ. And so they believed in God. They did all these things. But he said, no. The only way is your total death. There's no half. There's no part. There's total death. And then there's his life. And the vehicle by which that is manifest is, again, some it's instant, some it's a long time, but the vehicle is this apprehension, which is revealed in Jacob, in Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So his name, Abram's name, took him 100 years before he saw the mystery. And then his name was changed to Abraham instead of Abram. It took Jacob a massive struggle until finally he admitted he was the son of the snake. And then as soon as that happened, his name was changed to Israel, she who sees God. And Isaac, it was instant. But it was an instant death. It cost him everything at that instant. So those are the three ways in which the ancients said that man saw God. But in each level of that, you always have to see that you're the chief of sinners. You have no righteousness. As long as you are alive, you're still manifest as chief of sinners. And that's, of course, what Paul said.
He said Galatians 2:20, don't he?
Yeah, I am crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live. Yet not I that liveth.
That's right. I've read it. I know what it says.
Yeah, but if you're still there, then you're not a yet not I.
I'm the I that liveth.
Well, if you are the I, then you're totally abandoned. There's no aspect of leaning on your own arm of understanding for anything. You can't help but preach, because you can't help but reveal. You believe, therefore you speak. It'll be manifest. It can't be part way. It's either all or nothing.
But part of what you're saying is it's impossible.
No, I'm not
saying. Because there's no one you can name that's achieved it. You haven't achieved
it. I just said the ones that achieved it were revealed in Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.
But today, in this time.
Well, it's never our business.
But it's your
say not even in your heart.
But it's your business to say those who haven't, because that's what you're saying. No one has achieved.
I've never said anything about who did and who didn't achieve.
Well, that's what you've been saying the last 5 minutes, it sounded like to me. Is it that, you know, it's...
No, I'm saying to you what has to happen here, and we'll see.
Okay, I don't want to dominate this, but let's go ahead.
Okay, let's go back now to...
Yeah.
What did I say? To Exodus 15. Exodus 17, excuse me.
Now these now aren't necessarily in any kind of order, they're just the order that I thought of them. So Exodus 17, no, it's not, did I say that? What is it? Exodus 17, yeah.
When you see verse 15?
This is what happens. This is the first enemy and the last enemy, the enemy that continues throughout the walk of a believer. Here he's manifested as Amalek. And we study this every year. We read all the scriptures about Amalek. We find out that, first of all, my God, all of those guys were Amalek. Herod was Amalek. And then you finally come to this situation, wait a minute, I am Amalek. I am the one that's constantly trying to kill the evil one, trying to kill the Son of God, trying to put him in prison. So here, then came Amalek and fought with Israel in Rephidim. And Moses said unto Joshua, choose out men and go out and fight with Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on the top of the hill with the rod of God in my hand. So Joshua did as Moses had said to him and fought with Amalek. Moses, Aaron, and Hur went up to the top of the hill. And it came to pass when Moses held up his hand that Israel prevailed. And when he let down his hand, Amalek prevailed. But Moses' hands were heavy. And they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat thereon. And Aaron and Hur stayed upon his hands, the one on the one side and the other on the other side. His hands were steady until the going down of the sun. And Joshua discomfited or defeated Amalek and his people with the edge of the sword. And the Lord said unto Moses, write this for a memorial in a book, and rehearse it in the ears of Joshua, for I will utterly put out of remembrance of Amalek from there under heaven. And Moses built an altar and called the name of it Jehovah Nissi. For he said, because the Lord hath sworn that the Lord will have war with Amalek from generation to generation. Now, Amalek takes many forms. But the word Nisi means my banner or my identity. And so that's why it's so critical for us as believers to begin to be apprehended by this mystery. We are no longer Americans or Jews or Christians or Russians or that's all gone. We are no longer male or female, bond or free, black or white, that's all gone. And all of the names that we in our mind identify ourselves with and all of the activities associated with that identity are manifested in Amalek. So I'm an American, Amalek. I am a Texan, Amalek. whatever it is. I'm a Republican, Amalek. I'm a Democrat, Amalek. I'm male, Amalek. I'm female, Amalek. I'm young, I'm old, Amalek. They're all manifestations of the identity that you have still held on to. And so part of this mystery of sanctification is the understanding that you no longer have any of those identifiers. In your thinking, you no longer have any of those identifiers. In your speech, you no longer have any of those identifiers. In your prayers, you no longer have any of those identifiers. That may not be the first thing that happens, but that's what that means. Jehovah Nisi, or Yahweh Nisi, it should say. That's why we'll end up with Yahweh, just Yahweh. That's the Tetragrammaton. That's the name that was that nobody could say. And so, I mean, it's manifested in why. What is it? I got it somewhere. YHWH is the way it's, and that's the trick that a Jewish rabbi played in the 12th century, where he translated the Old Testament into their language, and instead of putting Yahweh, he put Jehovah. The word Yahweh is used 6,000 times or more in the Bible, and almost every place that it is, it's got Jehovah. It's all because of that one rabbi that was trying to keep the Christians or anybody else from using Yahweh.
He just
messing with them.
I don't get the joke.
The joke is we have identities, i.e., Jehovah's Witnesses. Mm-hmm. We have thousands of songs with Jehovah in it.
What does Jehovah Jireh mean? I've heard something.
We're going to get to that in a minute. But my point is, Jehovah is this made-up word.
Yeah. I've heard that recently. I just didn't know that.
All right.
I didn't understand.
All right, so would you say Jehovah Jireh?
Yeah.
Okay, so you understand, everybody? Have any questions about your identity, your banner?
So our banner ultimately.
Well, we'll struggle with that one.
Or if you want to take it all the way, we have no identity because we're dead and only he lives. So
how's that worked out for you? I mean, all right. That's what we're studying. All right. Jehovah Jireh. This is a biggie. This probably should have been the first one we studied. Jehovah Jireh is the Lord will provide. So, did we look at Exodus 17:15? Yes, we did. Okay, this is just one of many of the Lord will provide. Let's go to I just had it. Oh, there it is. Let's go to Genesis 22.
Although they often say your
Genesis 22. This is where Abraham was commanded to offer up Isaac. This is a place of Isaac's revelation. And remember, Well, let's just look at the first few verses of 22. And it came to pass after these things that God did tempt Abraham, or test him, and said unto him, Abraham. And he said, Behold, here I am. And he said, Take now thy son, thine only son Isaac, whom thou lovest, and get thee unto the land of Moriah, and offer him there for a burnt offering upon one of the mountains, which I will tell thee of. And Abraham rose up early in the morning, and saddled his ass, and took two of his young men with him, and Isaac, his son, and clave the wood for the burnt offering, and rose up and went into the place which God had told him. Now the two that were with him were Eliezer, who was his chief steward, and Ishmael, who was his child by Hagar. And so he had the ways he thought the promise was going to go with them. So, and then on the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place afar off. And Abraham said unto his young men, Abide you here with the ass, and I and this lad will go yonder and worship and come again to you. And Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it upon Isaac, his son. And he took the fire in his hand and a knife, and they went both of them together. As Isaac spake unto Abraham, his father, and said, My father. And he said, Here am I, my son. And he said, Behold the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for a burnt offering? And Abraham said, My son, God will provide himself a lamb for a burnt offering. And so they went, both of them together. And they came to the place which God had told them of. And Abraham built an altar there, and laid the wood in order, and bound Isaac his son, and laid him upon the altar upon the wood. Laid him on the altar upon the wood. And Abraham stretched forth his hand, and took the knife to slay his son. And the angel of the Lord called unto him out of heaven and said, Abraham. And he said, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, Here am I. And he said, Lay not thine hand upon the lad, neither do thou anything unto him. For now I know that thou fearest God, seeing that thou hast not withheld thy son, thine only son, from me. And Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him, a ram caught in a thicket by his horns. And Abraham went and took the ram and offered him up for a burnt offering instead of the son. And Abraham called the name of that place Jehovah Jireh, as it is said, To this day in the mount of the Lord it shall be seen. And we're going to get back to that in a minute, but And the angel of the Lord called unto Abraham out of heaven the second time, and he said, By myself have I sworn, saith the Lord, for because thou hast done this thing, and hast not withheld thy son, thine only son, that in blessing I will bless thee, and in multiplying I will multiply thy seed as the stars of heaven, and as the sand which is upon the seashore, and thy seed shall possess the gate of his enemies. And in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed, because thou hast obeyed my voice. So Abraham returned unto his young men, and they rose and went together to Beersheba. And Abraham dwelt at Beersheba. He didn't take Isaac. There's no mention of Isaac. He took Eliezer, and he took Ishmael when they returned to where they came from. But Isaac, there's no mention of him coming down with them. The idea is that Isaac died, became a mystery. He was the mystery man in Jewish literature. But the one we're studying is Jehovah Jireh in verse 14. The Lord will provide. Now, if you are providing for yourself, using your own arm of understanding, then you have yet to see the Lord will provide. And so that becomes a blockage to you to see the Lord will provide. Just as if you have an identity other than abandonment, then that identity is keeping you from seeing. And the only way you see as each of these things are discussed is ask for forgiveness for those things. Now we're going to, there's many more, but that's a good first step. Because sanctification, the end result of sanctification is faith alone. So we've looked at Jehovah Nissi, and we've looked at Jehovah Jireh. Can you see in being apprehended by him that when you are willing to trust that, that those things that he identified you before are gone, you have no more identity, and the things for which you provide for yourself that you think are so necessary, but you have to see that he will provide, Jehovah Jireh. And that's a big deal, because that blind faith is all seems impossible. But I promise you that blind faith goes only to those who have rid themselves of all these other labels. Okay, that's the names of God 101. Anybody have any thoughts, questions, responses?
Yeah, it just struck me as just so, it always strikes me as so way out there. God is asking him to kill his only son.
The promise.
I know, right. And it's the person that he believes will be the promise, at least for the most part, you know, if you believe that. You know, he was also probably thinking as a second that perhaps that Ishmael and Eliezer might just have to be the promise after this. I don't know, but,
remember, we've talked about this many times, but this is kind of interesting. It's said in many, many writings that give a voice to Isaac as he's walking up the mountain, and give a voice to Moses as he's walking up the mountain. It's a slow recognition. Moses knows, but, I mean, Abraham knows, but Isaac doesn't at first. And so there's these discussions. And Satan appeared to Isaac in the guise of a young man, his mind, and said, look at what's going on here. Your father is old and getting senile, and he's about to ask me to get on that altar and offer, let him offer me for a burnt offering, because we have no ram. We have no lamb. We have no other offering. He must have lost his mind. And then finally, Isaac said, Isaac said, get thee behind me, Satan.
Yeah.
Same thing happened. This is the mind of Abraham talking. You must have heard God wrong. God would never ask you to do this. This is evil. You didn't hear God. You just heard him wrong. This is Satan offering, asking you to offer up the promise. And after much discussion, Abraham said, get thee behind me, Satan. Now, can you do that every time your mind starts giving you issues? and you know that your mind is the personification of Satan, of the evil one? Think on these things.
I have one comment here, though. The teaching on the names of God is born out of the conversation that we've been having about the mind. John Bojo is a part of this. And as you're teaching today, we're talking, it's like this is the power that like an exhortation to not use your mind, because we don't know how God works. The mind would always try and decide how God works and then want us to go along with it.
Mind use and will convince you you're doing it in the name of God.
Well, whatever. Some point there's a transaction that takes place. And I believe the mind of Christ, the transaction is to, as he did in the temptation in the wilderness, to brush him off. Say, no, I do the will of God. So it kind of, maybe, see what you think. The mind does stuff. Whether you abandon it or not, it's trying to do stuff all the time, just like it's talking to Isaac. But the sin is to agree with it, to engage it, to finally make the deal with the mind and go its way rather than abandon, turn away from, repent, whatever the best word is, and not be in league with it. Because it seems like no matter how much we talk about it, the fact that it's there is undeniable. And even in Christ, the mind of Christ, he didn't empty himself for no reason. He emptied himself because there was stimulus to empty.
Then what did he empty himself for?
Well, he emptied himself from the mind to obey in obedience to God. He,
right, because
that was his position, that was his way.
Because he knew revealed to him that the activities of the mind, no matter how good they seemed, were not the way.
Exactly.
And so the whole, and the thing that we get confused about, though, is we think we can say, "Get thee behind me, Satan," or you'll see that the mind tricks us and we're doing something over here, and think that we're just using that little part of the mind, and we're not using it with what we think is the good stuff we do. And that's the point of this, is the subtlety, is that Satan, I mean the evil one, which is you, is constantly trying to resurrect himself, and again, the purpose of your being and that happening is so that you can ignore that and understand that it's only an abandonment that the way is manifest. But every time you use your mind for something, then you resurrected the whole thing. You didn't resurrect a little bit of it. And so it's you figure out ways to justify using your mind for the things you think you should use your mind for. But you can't just raise up a little bit. It's all raised up or it's nothing. It's all abandonment. Or, you know, if he said don't even think about or consider or give any importance to what you're going to eat or what you're going to wear or where you're going to live, then that's the issues of life. And so, you know, that's why you give no thought for anything. And here we see when Jehovah Jireh, the Lord, will provide, if he provided in the ultimate test, then he will provide, just as he said, consider the lilies of the field, consider the birds of the air, be the branch and the vine, so that you just become an open vessel. The clog in the vessel, the contact between you and God, is called your mind. The instead of God, the instead of Christ. And as long as that is there, then you have no direct communication with God. The pipe is clogged with you. That's why Jesus, I do nothing of myself or from myself. I only do what I see the Father doing, because he had emptied himself to the point of a vacuum, and so there it is. And that's what he wants from us. And that's what we're studying these things for, so we maybe can help see where we may not be totally emptied, where we have these things that we are doing, which are just part of our identity, and we don't even think they're wrong. Okay? Anybody else? Take a big guess.